So imagine spending 37 billion rand to build houses specifically for low-income female-headed households. And then you realize that the massive economic boom of actually building those homes is going, well, almost entirely to men.
Yeah, it is a staggering paradox. And that is exactly what South Africa faced after 1994.
Right. So welcome to today's deep dive, where we are looking at a South African government policy framework document aimed at empowering women in the human settlements and construction sector. Okay, let's unpack this. Because building a nation isn't just about the brick and mortar. It's about, you know, who gets paid to lay those bricks and who ultimately holds the deed.
Exactly. And the initial fix to that gap was actually a pretty massive financial mandate. The government just decided to allocate 30% of the national housing budget exclusively to women-owned construction projects.
Wow. Wait, 30% of the national budget?
Oh, yeah. It is huge. We are not talking about small community grants here. We are talking about shifting the gravitational pull of an entire industry's capital.
But, and here's where it gets really interesting. If you suddenly mandate 30% of a massive national budget to a specific group, doesn't that immediately invite bad actors to try and game the system? I mean, if I am an entrenched male-owned construction firm, I'm just going to find a female employee, make her a paper CEO, and keep getting those lucrative government contracts.
Yeah, absolutely. And that manipulative practice is actually known as fronting. Bad actors basically use women as shell directors to win the bid.
Right, like a loophole.
Exactly.
Yeah.
While the traditional power players, you know, the guys who always ran things, they retain total control over the supply chain, the material sourcing, and obviously the profit margins. So the policy designers knew a financial quota alone would just enrich the same old players behind a new facade.
So how does a government document actually stop corporate shell games? Because you cannot just audit every single brick laid on every site. That is impossible.
Well, you dismantle the mechanics of fronting by attacking the vulnerability that it relies on, and that is a lack of technical and business skills. The framework mandates very tangible training for women.
Like hands-on construction skills.
Yes, ranging from actual bricklaying, plumbing, and drywalling, all the way up to high-level financial management and risk assessment. And what's fascinating here is that empowerment isn't just handing out a contract. It is about giving women actual control over the supply chain and the materials.
Oh, I see. So if the woman holding the contract actually knows how to negotiate bulk cement prices, manage the site ledger, and audit the risk reports, she doesn't need a shadow company to execute the project.
Exactly, yeah. She holds the actual operational power. She basically becomes the bottleneck for the bad actors.
Right.
When you equip someone to control the money and the materials, they stop being a convenient front. They become an undeniable competitor.
That makes so much sense. And that operational power leads directly to how these newly trained contractors are deployed in the real world. Because the document outlines this thing called the Women's Build Letsema Project.
Right, the Letsema Project.
Yeah. And every year during Women's Month, these women contractors build houses specifically for vulnerable groups, like the elderly and orphans. And it directly commemorates the historic 1956 Women's March.
Which is so powerful, it takes the physical act of pouring concrete and elevates it to a literal continuation of a civil rights struggle.
Yeah, totally. And it makes you wonder, how does tying modern construction work to a historical civil rights march change the way a community values a new housing development? I mean, it redefines the real estate itself.
It really does. When a community sees a housing development built by women, for women, directly commemorating a historical fight for rights, it is not just a government handout anymore.
Right. It's a monument.
Exactly. A monument to economic reclamation. The architecture of the policy solves a logistical housing shortage while systematically dismantling a patriarchal supply chain.
Which just goes to show, you know, whether you work in policy, business, or tech, budgets are moral documents. How you spend money can simultaneously solve a logistical problem and a systemic social issue like gender inequality.
Yeah, absolutely. It proves that how a government allocates its procurement budget is fundamentally a moral choice with very real structural consequences.
Totally. Which leaves you with a pretty massive final question to ponder on your own. If a government can actively mandate that the very people historically denied property rights are now the ones contracted to build and own the properties, what other historically male-dominated industries could be radically transformed just by changing who gets the government contracts?